Let's start with these two reports coming from CNN. One of them is saying that Russians are using powerful high-explosive FAB-1500 bombs capable of undermining Ukraine's defenses. When they're talking about Ukraine's defenses, they're simply talking about the Western defense system. It's not Ukraine's. In another report, they're talking about that Russia outproduces the whole West by 3 times in terms of artillery. And you see the quantity and the quality of Russian army today. And still you see people are arguing out there that NATO can defeat Russia. What NATO can add to the Ukraine 2021? We know that Ukrainian army was trained and equipped by NATO.
Well, first, Russia produces more than 3 times more artillery shells. It's probably twice as that, so probably about 6 times more. But yeah, it's beyond the point. It's obviously because Russia outproduces combined West and the high precision weapons. And it's in terms of cruise missiles, standoff weaponry, I mean, combined West is not even in the same league. So in this case, I do not want to say that NATO is a paper tiger, you know, that easily, albeit it does qualify. European part certainly does. But the only thing which they could add would be some kind of the, you know, air force, you know, air component, but it would have pretty much faced the same fate as the whatever was the deal with the Ukrainian air force, which was obviously assembled through all former Warsaw Pact countries. And now they still play this game with F-16s. It doesn't matter what they place there. F-16s, F-35s, F-22s, it doesn't matter. Against the modern, which in Russia it's combined, it's VKS, it's called Air Space Forces. It has its air defense component and of course Air Force. And this is the combination the West never faced in their history. And especially considering the new and evolving constantly Russian air defense. I'm not talking about Air Force, which is the most experienced air force in the world right now. But the fact that I don't see how they can even do anything about it. I mean, they can certainly create some chaos and harm, make no mistake. They still have some capability. But the point is the final result will be all the same. It just will be more blood and more casualties, and just that's it. So in this particular case, they cannot add anything. And even Stoltenberg today, he comes out and says, yeah, hypersonic weapons are such a threat. We need this, you know, multi-layered air defense. And they don't have anything with what to stop those hypersonic weapons. And they will not have it for a long, long time. So there you go.
We see Sikorsky just recently said that NATO troops are already in Ukraine. Do you think that he's trying to normalizing sending troops to Ukraine, or he has other type of message for this division in Europe?
Keep in mind that Sikorsky is married to Ann Applebaum. She is fanatic Russophobe and she's neocon. He, on the other hand, he's just merely attachment to his, you know, psycho wife. And these are people who hate Russians, I mean, profoundly. It's just, you know, visceral hatred. So, and as such, they are irrational people. They are not rational. Their only message is to basically spew whatever they can spew, you know, in terms of propaganda. And they obviously are hurting like, I don't know what, because obviously they know where it all came down to. The Ukraine is defeated. And in this particular case, his message is only one, you know, it just to create an additional chaos and somehow try to inspire others to commit suicide. When he talks about that there are troops on the ground, yes, there are. We know that recently there was like, what, 171 French troops killed, and yesterday, I believe Mr. Putin mentioned 6,000 of them have been killed. So these are not volunteers. Everybody understands most of them are cadre officers or cadre soldiers who have been sent there in all different kinds of roles, you know, including the barrier troops. So they are in there. It's just that, of course, for the sake of the, you know, the almost Frank Herbert's Dune, the forms must be obeyed. They try to obey the form saying that, hey, we don't send anybody there. They are all volunteers, but they are all cadre. And you know this, even Scott Ritter today, I believe a Judge Napolitano stated that, yeah, there are true NATO troops there. Another matter, Russians don't care. They kill them too. You know, so in this particular case, same as with Taurus missiles, Germany already is being destroyed as it is, and it has nothing to do with Russia. It is the United States which is destroying Germany. Now, for Germans now to send, after their humiliation with all their IRIS-T air defense complexes, with the dismal performance of Leopard 2 tanks and things of this nature, it's a red line for them. For Russia, what is Taurus? It's pretty much same iteration of the Scalp or Storm Shadow missile. And Russia has a very good combat score against those missiles. But for Germany, it is the final psychological step to return back to the country they killed 27 million people of. And if they want the repeat, obviously, that there is a serious psychological thing there. And even Scholz, even those people in Bundestag, many of whom today, Bundestag voted again. Only 150 voted for sending Taurus missiles. 495 voted against. There are no people in Germany who like Russians, but even they kind of get it, you know? So, and what can I say? It doesn't matter what they send. It doesn't matter who they send. They will have the same fate as what, you know, armed forces of Ukraine.
We know that the United Kingdom is insisting to take Taurus missiles from Germany and send them to Ukraine. How does Russia perceive this?
This is open in Russian media. It's everybody discusses it. So it's not a secret or anything special, you know, to discuss. They are obsessed with the Kerch Bridge. So, and by the way, this is civilian structure. So they want to, you know, blow up civilian object. Yeah, it's the terrorism pure and simple, but it is British. They are, you know, they are chihuahuas militarily. They are nobody. And they try to, you know, live vicariously through somebody else, you know, to harm Russia. They understand they are a pug, you know, barking at the elephant. So, and in this case, yeah, this stupid idea to do this exchange between Germans and, you know, it makes no sense whatsoever. Russians know this. Everybody knows this. So, yeah, sure. Yeah, they will send them some kind of, you know, Taurus missiles, and they will send it to Ukraine. I mean, as I already stated, technically, it doesn't make any difference. But politically, I mean, you know what? I really doubt the competence of British governing and military structures. I really do. There are no people who really have the bright minds there anymore. So, harebrained schemes, you know.
What's in it for the United Kingdom by pushing all these things against Russia? Are they seeking some sort of strategic goals?
No, it's a putting there in a very kind of down the earth terms, it's a butthurt. They probably sense that they are nobodies. They really are. Economically, they are pathetic, you know, and militarily even more so. So, and they still pretend that they are big guys. They are not. Okay, they are just, you know, just chihuahuas, as I already stated. But they try to pretend that they are big, they mean something, they, you know, matter, things of this nature. So, and what can I say? It's funny. Well, it would have been funny if it wouldn't have been deadly, because these guys, the only thing they can do is to kill civilians. They don't have army. It's pathetic what, you know, their navy is a laughing stock, you know, their economy is in ruins. They are completely overrun. There's no really, I mean, British people anymore. You know, they are completely overrun by the immigration. So it's a nation which is in complete decomposition mode right now. And the only thing what's left for them is to somehow validate themselves as pretending, oh yeah, we hunt Russians, you know, oh my God, look at us, we're so tough. The Russians laugh at them openly now, you know, so yeah, they can still kill some Russian people, Russian civilians. They are good at, you know, doing the false flags. They are good at killing civilians. In Syria, for example, this is what they're good at. As the armed forces, they are nobodies. I mean, they have one combat-ready brigade, armor brigade. I mean, it's a week of work for Russian armed forces on the front line, okay? So their whole army can fit into their new Wembley Stadium and with some space to spare, you know? So this is everything you need to know about them. And so you have now also the totally degenerate British elites. They go through those absolutely useless programs in Oxford, you know, mostly humanities, because they obviously are not very good at mathematics and physics. So they're for them easier to go into some political science, you know, English literature, you know, program. And you have you have Borgia, a clown. You have now Liz Truss, who was geographically challenged. It is pathetic to look at that, you know. These are people who are highly uncultured, highly uneducated, but because of that, because they are so crude and they're so, I mean, uncultured, they feel the need to validate themselves. And here's, you know, what they have these big guys, you know, because it is between Russia and United States. So, and those chihuahuas jumping around, you know, so, and there you go. England or United Kingdom is one of them. So there you go.
The Telegraph reported that European NATO members should prepare for a scenario in which the US withdraws from the alliance. It seems that they're talking about if Trump wins, he's not willing to be part of NATO. But everybody knows that Trump wants more money coming from Europe.
Well, the combined West is in the complete chaos anyway, as we speak. Obviously, I don't buy this whole story about Trump quitting NATO. No, he's not going to quit NATO. And in other matter, because Europeans are freeloaders, okay? They have been. Obviously, it was all done on the false pretext of Soviet Union attacking, you know, those, you know, okay, Soviet Union didn't want to attack. They obviously had contingency planning, but it's now Russia. Why would Russia attack Europe? What they are afraid of, Europeans, that because they are already losing their standard of living, they are being deindustrialized, that now comes Trump and says, you know what, spend more. Obviously, considering the fact that obviously spending more means also buying American products of the military industrial complex. And Europe doesn't have real resources now to develop cutting edge system, weapon systems, which require a very serious research and development procedures and the process and a lot of money. And then, of course, they cannot produce them in appropriate, quantities. If you look attentively at their budgets, nothing changes there. They are still, I mean, they don't believe that Russians are going to attack. Nobody who has a half brain believes that. But of course, and they react appropriately in fiscal terms because the budgets do not grow. They don't want them to grow. Europeans used to live, I mean, really well. They created this Cold War narrative that Soviet Union wanted to attack. Obviously, United States was kind of defending Europe from the threat, which wasn't really there. And when you look at this, it's all about money. It's all about political interests. And it's all, frankly speaking, a BS, you know. So, and this whole thing that Trump is going to quit NATO, oh, please, you know, it's just like ridiculous. But he will push down the throats of the deindustrialized Europe. A lot of whatever America can produce at this stage, they will try to increase maybe some quantities, but I don't know what United States can offer now, which hasn't been completely discredited as weapon systems. You know, it's just simple as that. The last thing which is left is to shut down the bunch of F-35s, which will be provided, you know, to decide to go there. And after that, it's done. What? United States is not going to transfer nuclear weapons, obviously. So there you go.
We had this conflict between Zelensky and Zaluzhny. It seems that the conflict is continuing within the Zelensky administration. Right now, there are some disagreements between the Ukrainian foreign minister and Zelensky. What's going on?
Well, it doesn't matter, as I already stated many times, actually, that it's all, shuffling there, their political bickering and maneuvering. But the point is there is a serious thrust now from the United States. And, well, again, Europe is really not a subject here. It's object basically being manipulated, that they need to go and start negotiating with Russians until it's too late. Okay. And Vladimir Putin yesterday was pretty clear. You want to negotiate? Sure, yeah, go right ahead. But the point is, it will not be the stupid conferences, or what have you, or repetition of the Minsk agreements to rearm. He was talking about the fact that, sure, Russia was always ready for negotiations, but only on the conditions right now with the understanding the realities on the ground. Realities on the ground will be at least Russia retains all territories, including up to the left bank of Dnieper. And then, of course, total demilitarization and denazification of Ukraine. But Putin is being truthful in this respect. He also understands that no matter what Kuleba, Minister of the Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, talks about, Ukraine constitutionally is not allowed to negotiate anything. So Mr. Zelensky made sure that the road is, the way, so to speak, was blocked. And there you go. So what can they do now? It's their problem. So, but the West, the United States, is desperate to start something, because the more it goes, the more evident the crushing defeat of the combined West becomes evident.
Pope was talking about that there needs to be some negotiations because Ukraine lost the war, and at the end of the day, we have to have some sort of negotiations. How did you see the reflection of this comment in the United States?
Oh, it did hurt many, especially when he said you need to have a courage to raise the white flag. I mean, this is pretty much, you cannot really misinterpret this thing. It's basically admit of defeat, and after that, once you admit the defeat on the West part, because, yeah, Ukraine is done as such, but it's the combined West. And again, combined West is the United States. They need to face the reality. Are they ready? No. But they still need some kind of maneuvering, because they understand that the elections are coming. And, there's so much at stake for Democratic Party and those neocons, because if we assume that Trump wins, considering the fact, not that he will be doing this to find the real justice, but he will be vengeful, obviously, which is, hey, okay, it works for me, so many of them will be expending, life behind bars, so I don't think so he'll make this stupid mistake he did during his first term, when he literally surrendered the governance on the country to the deep state and did nothing to address the issue of neocons. Fact is, he brought all of them to his administration. So, and that's what finished his presidency into, whimper, not with the bang. And in this case, sure, they need to do something. But how can they do this without losing face? They cannot do that. Because the more it drags out, as Mr. Putin stated, not yesterday, but during Tucker's interview, when he spoke to Tucker Carlson, he said, for now, they still have some time to do it with some dignity left. Okay, so I think so. The more it drags out, there will be less and less dignity left for the West to do anything about it. And obviously, with the elections in November, we know what's coming. It will be huge.
It seems that the election is much more important for them than Ukraine in totality.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't forget, we Russians, or Slavs in general, for the elite in Washington, we're subhumans. You know, so if neocons, for example, hate Russians for a number of reasons, and they hate them irrationally, so they're, well, that deep state or the Anglo-Saxon elites, which are in Washington, well, they're Anglo-Saxon, they're a lot of Germanic people, they view Slavs as subhumans. For them, you know, 100,000 more, 100,000 less of dead Ukrainians or Russians means absolutely nothing. They are okay with this, you know. So in this particular case, yes, elections are much more important for them.
In this interview, he talked about Russia's readiness for retaliatory nuclear war. And you see in the Western media, Spiegel, all these Western media were talking about Russia is ready to use nuclear bombs against the West. They're reporting on something totally out of discussion.
Well, it's not only out of discussion. They, as usually, they misrepresent. Again, you have to understand, there are no normal humans working in the Western media, legacy corporate media. Most of them, people on the level of the senior editors and further up this stair, they're not normal people. They are basically people in charge of propaganda. They don't have no morality. They have no integrity. The only thing they are paid and told what to do, and they gladly do it. They compromised completely everything in their lives, and they're not even good professionals. They cannot even lie properly. What Mr. Putin constantly reiterates is are there Articles 26 and 27 of the Russian doctrine, military doctrine, which he reiterates and says, you want a nuclear war? You will get it, you know, as long as you attack us. And that's nothing new. I mean, it has been there. The doctrine has been in action since 2014. So 10 years now. But they present it as some kind of revelation that Russia is going to attack, despite the fact that actually this is absolutely not what is being said. And that's why I'm saying you do not want to shake the hand of any CNN or MSNBC editor or their leading correspondents. You will need the course of strong antibiotics after that, because you will be, you know, struck with some kind of disease. They are disease. They are people who carry this moral disease, which is, as I already stated, many of them will qualify for the war criminals. These are the people who are pushing this agenda for years. As the result, they have blood on their hands. And as the result, the only thing which is left for them is to continue to misinterpret everything the way they see it and their agenda dictates to them. As I already stated, there are no normal people in Washington Post, in New York Times, in Wall Street Journal, CNN, or anything on the top. They are all basically liars. Apart from, as I already stated, most of them are totally ignorant, illiterate people. You cannot get decent education when you graduate from the Harvard Journalism School. These are people who are there not to report. They don't even know how to report. They are there to, as using the Jim Stoppard, I believe, there, who said that if you want to change the world, journalism is the best tool. So you have the activists, many of them, as I already stated, are utterly uncultured, who want to change the world per agenda. And if this changing of the world involves killing of hundreds of thousands of people, so be it. For them, it's not biggie. They do not understand what real war is. They do not understand the facts of the war. They do not understand how it's going to touch their families in case, God forbid, you know, things start to go. And that is combination of the, well, you know, evil. That's what it is.
Did you watch that clip of Macron, that Zelensky calls Macron on the day of the commencement of the special military operation and declares Kiev was surrounded by Russians? On the day he was ready to negotiate with Russians, even Macron says he tries to talk with his allies to facilitate that. Why I'm saying this? Because Macron just recently is getting radical.
Well, he is very upset with losing Africa, losing quote unquote. Obviously, African forces with the help of Russian forces kicked French out. So they are, well, using their, again, the jargon from the street, are butt-hurting, you know. So, and yeah, France also, like a Great Britain, yeah, they have their, the only thing they have going for them is their four nuclear powered submarines, which carry their nuclear missiles. They have independent nuclear deterrent, and that's about it. French armed forces are a joke, basically. And so, yeah. And then you have the guy who married, who knows who, whatever that creature is. I mean, pardon my French. You have the guy who obviously has zero experiences in life. He has zero education. He's a Rothschild kid who was a bank teller, essentially. That's who he was. And so you have the guy who tries to be a statesman. I mean, pardon me, there are no statesmen in the Western world, like zero. None of them is statesmen. They don't even understand what a real governance is, apart from the fact that the system itself, the way the so-called Western quote-unquote democracies are set up, you cannot really govern with anything. It's not governance. It's the basically the political system established such way as to launder money, for their power class. And that's who Macron is. He's a caretaker boy, and suddenly he wants to negotiate and pretend that he is some kind of the power center. France is not. It stopped being a long time ago. It's running fast into the third, well, second world type country. The only thing which they really have left is their nuclear power, engineering and energy, facilities, because they have fairly advanced for Western world. 70% of the energy is worked, produced, generated in the French nuclear power stations, which, by the way, actually have huge technological issues right now. They have obviously Airbus and some engine making capacity, and that's about it, honestly. If you look at this, they have obviously a shipbuilding in Saint-Nazaire, but that's about it. In terms of the overall economy, they and French always had this problem with Germans. And I have to quote here esteemed Alistair Crook, when he correctly stated that the whole thing about European Union was separation of powers, so to speak. Germany was responsible for the economic and financial development, and France was kind of tasked with the representing unified Europe with the from the point of view of the foreign policy. Now, suddenly, what can you possibly represent today? As I already stated, we suddenly, the West was called, the bluff was called, the European part, they cannot find their way out of their wet paper bag. And so economically, yeah, it's not even serious, And then you have these people who still think that they are very important, but they are not. Macron is the exhibit A.
We had a joint warship exercises, Iran, Russia, and China together in the Gulf of Oman. What's your interpretation of this? Are these countries finally getting together to be more connected in terms of their military?
It's a complex dynamics there. You have to keep in mind that Russia and Iran, they are getting pretty close, especially considering the fact that of this North-South corridor, which is going to the Indian Ocean, and China is not part of this game, this is a gigantic economic development issue in this corridor, because it obviously touches India, because it ends up in the Bandar Abbas, and at the shores of the Indian Ocean, which of course opens a tremendous transport artery. So in this particular case, when you look at this, and especially on the Russia's Middle Eastern policy, and especially when you know that Iranian forces and Russian forces actually cooperated in Syria, inevitably this creates the conditions which are very favorable between Russia and Iran, and including through the military technical cooperation. We know that Iran allegedly already receiving Su-35s fighter jets. These are big items, believe me. And then, of course, we don't know what Russia will provide Iran with, God forbids, if somebody will decide to go to war with Iran. So in this case, Iran would love to see additional Russian weapon systems being delivered. And then, of course, you have the commercial interest, which is obviously huge, because Iran is the critical part of this corridor, which goes through Azerbaijan and Caspian Sea by the maritime transport. So it's huge in itself on their own, you know, enclosed, so to speak, isolated system. But then, of course, you have China. And China has this gigantic plans on the BRI, you know, the Belt and Road Initiative. And when you put this together, you have obviously the, how to say it, the contours of the upcoming new brave new world, you know. And but Iran inevitably will be gravitating towards Russia, which is absolutely logical from the point of view of geography and their transport routes. And as such, what can I say? You know, their closeness, you know, how to say it? Yeah, it's going to get even grow even closer in this respect. But China, obviously, being the part of BRICS and being very important part of BRICS, so obviously wants to also, you know, flex its muscles. It's about time for China, so to speak, to go global. They have a very large and advanced, fairly advanced surface fleet. So yeah, it's kind of like, when you look at it, this is like, yeah. India, I don't know, Indians, they have their own way of doing things. But I mean, very many people said that, hey, this I in BRICS should be actually Iran. So, and these are the contours of the, again, as I already stated, the new probably military political bloc, which is emerging because obviously somebody has to put the, you know, combined West the way it exists today out of its misery. So,
despite having these huge changes that you've mentioned, you see United States still insisting on this stupid conflict in Ukraine, in the Red Sea against Houthis. Unbelievable how the foreign policy of the United States is taking down this country. This is a huge country and nobody knows what's going on with these elites.
Nowhere good. Nowhere good. And that's what I'm saying, that there are no statesmen. The last statesman, really, with the... I have to, it's a stretch, but I would say it was George H.W. Bush Sr. But of course, people the scale of, and again, they operated on a different, you know, premises. People the scale of Eisenhower or even Nixon, you know, no, United States doesn't produce anything like this anymore. And this is a result of a complete destruction of the American higher education. American higher education is humanities part is garbage, basically. It's trash. It's the indoctrination degree meals. And when you look at people with all those political scientists and people who advise them, you cannot run the country on attorneys, on lawyers, and political scientists only. You need to have people who have the guts, who have the principles, and that does not exist anymore in the United States. There are some people in Congress which you would say that, yeah, potentially they could come out and become maybe people who can unify somehow nation. But we, the United States itself, became so torn. There are no unified American nation anymore. So, and as a result, corruption of the educational institution, corruption of the politics, corruption of the economy and the industrialization. So you need people of the immense scale, you know, so to handle this. And do not forget when they say, oh, give us a Putin. Some people say they don't understand that Vladimir Putin was just the part of the much larger machine, which grew out of the very different cultural and educational and military and intelligence environment than what you have today in the United States. Those people have been true patriots, you know, not patriots and waving the flags. They knew because they need to preserve people, the nation. Do you have people like that? Sadly, most of them are not in the position of power. There are people like that. Some of them are my friends. But the problem is, of course, they are not in the position of power. They cannot change anything. Well, they can trying to do it, you know, on the outside and being the voices of reason. But other than that, yeah, the blob, the yeah, it's a third world all the way, man. Well, actually, some third world countries maybe are even less corrupt than what it is right now. And as I already stated, they lack basic culture, they lack basic education. And my fourth book, which is coming, is about that. I mean, it's unbelievable. You look at these people, it's just, I won't allow many of them to mow my lawn in the front of the house. They would run the 7-Eleven store into the bankruptcy in 2 weeks, you know? But yet those people are sitting there just running all those so departments and ministries, and you see the result. That's what it is. Once proud and definitely a unique and a powerful country, look what they did to it.